Intervju Radija Študent. Socialna pravičnost v Izraelu. Že, ampak počasi. Kar je 15. maj za Španijo, je 14. julij za Izrael. Vsaj približno. Tega dne lani so se namreč pričeli tako imenovani socialni protesti v Tel Avivu proti visokim stanovanjskim stroškom, a so se zahteve kmalu razširile tudi na področje šolstva, zaposlovanja in podobno. Prestižna dolga avenija Rothschild v središču Tel Aviva je postala, podobno kot v Madridu, ogromno šotorišče. Septembra pa je gibanje na ulice izraelskih mest uspelo spraviti skoraj 500 000 ljudi, kar je za državo z manj kot 8 milijoni prebivalcev impresivna številka. Gibanje so po svetu primerjali tudi z arabsko pomladjo, ki je nekaj mesecev prej začela odstavljati diktatorje v regiji. A gibanje se od podobnih, vsaj od španskega ali ameriškega, razlikuje že v tem, da ni tako strogo horizontalno strukturirano, ampak je že na samem začetku poseglo po vertikalnih odločitvah. Gibanje je, kot rečeno, odpiralo pomembne družbene, politične in ekonomske teme, a šele na margini le teh se je sramežljivo odpiralo vprašanje okupacije palestinskih ozemelj ali vprašanje enakopravnosti palestinskih državljanov Izraela. Gibanje, ki se ima za gibanje za socialno pravičnost, je tako že na samem začetku na ključen del socialne pravičnosti pozabilo v zameno za večjo priljubljenost v izraelski družbi. Je bila ta odločitev pravilna? Na vse zadnje je 500 000 ljudi na ulicah izraelskih mest velik dosežek že sam po sebi. Protesti naj bi se letos ponovili, vendar si organizatorji ne delajo utvar, da bi lahko ponovili lanski uspeh. O temah, ki jih je gibanje odpiralo, njegovi strukturiranosti, odnosu gibanja do vprašanja okupacije, palestincev znotraj Izraela ter afriških beguncev in še čem, smo v Tel Avivu, na terasi stanovanja sredi predela Jafa, nekoč arabskega mesta, govorili z enim od glavnih takratnih in tokratnih organizatorjev protestov in pripadnikov gibanja, Alon Liam Greenom.
Let's start with the beginning. What were the basic reasons for the movement, the social movement, the protest movement in Israel to pop up?
Well, I think it depends who you're asking. The mainstream answer will be that the housing problem came to a situation that a lot of young people in Tel Aviv and in the center, big cities of Israel, couldn't afford to live. To continue living in the big cities, and that situation first of all drove a lot of young people from the center of the cities to the poor neighborhoods, and they came to the neighborhoods and drove the original people of the neighborhoods to another neighborhood and to another gentrification, you know the word. So it was a very big situation and a problem in Israel. And one day, this young lady called Daphne Leaf posted an event in Facebook, and she said, "I can't continue anymore. It's a special situation that we need to go out and put a tent on the street and then just start sleeping over there." And at the first night of this event, 1,000 people came, and people heard of it on Facebook on phones, and they heard something special is going around on the Rothschild Boulevard in Tel Aviv, and other came on in the third day. It was like a lot of thousands of tents around the Rothschild Boulevard, and another part of the boulevard got occupied by the people with their tents, And in the first weekend of the of these events, there was also tents in Jerusalem, and then in Haifa, and then in a lot of other cities. So people, there are people that still call this movement the housing protest movement. But as the leadership assembled in the first few days, assembled and was created, we decided that it can't stay just around housing problems, because it's not only housing that we have to deal with. It's also the education and the fact that we can't afford ourselves to go and study higher, to buy higher education in Israel, and to buy a degree, because it costs a lot of money, and the fact that we don't have any insurance that will have jobs in the future, and the fact that the prices of living in transportation, housing, food, and a lot of other stuff, they went so high, but the salaries stayed the same. So it was a very big problem. And we decided that this will be not only a housing protest, but a social protest. And that something is wrong with the system, and the thing that we want to change is the system, and not to have like a cosmetic solution for the housing problem. This is one way of looking at it. Of course, there are some opinions for here and for here, but another way to look on it is a much more radical way to look at it. I don't think there are like maybe 1,000 people in Israel that look at this that way, but one day before the first tent on the 14th of July, there was this bill in legislation in the Knesset, the parliament, the Israeli parliament, that passed, called the boycott bill. I don't know if you heard of it, but this bill says that you, as an Israeli citizen, can't call for a boycott on a settlement's product. And actually, it says that it's not legal to have a political debate, a very basic political debate about the settlements. It's like a very undemocratic and unsocial bill that passed. And I'm speaking on myself, because I worked on the parliament those days. I was a political assistant of one of the parliament members from the left, and we had a big fight. And for 2 weeks on a row, all of the newspapers and media asked tough questions about this bill, and if it's legal, if it's not legal. Tony Blair said, please, he called the parliament members, please don't vote for the law, it will cause problems. It was there was a very big debate over this bill, and I think some of the reasons that the Israeli, mainly in the young ages of the Israeli society, felt very disappointed and very angry, it's also because of this bill. I also know it because this day this bill passed, I went to the police to take a license for a big demonstration that we were supposed to held 3 days after the protest started, and we decided it should combine and not to go one demonstration over this and one demonstration over this. But I think it's one of the also one of the reasons it started.
You've mentioned before that the leadership came up with a decision that the spectrum of interests shouldn't be so narrow, only housing, but mm-hmm. it should encompass all other things. By leadership, what do you mean, and how do you compare? I mean, I suppose then that this movement is not a similar the Spanish movement, 15th of May, which is completely horizontal. How is the social movement in Israel structured?
It wasn't an organized structure. It was a much more materialist one that grew up and developed during the way. It was a combination of the people that came to Daphne's living room a few days before the event, before the first attempt to organize the event, to organize the media for the event, to organize the tents for the event, to organize the public call for the event and who will come and how to invite the biggest number of invites that you can, with the three people that organized the thing with the boycott bill and another demonstration. And it's like it's like that there was this group of people that started the first weekend, and they, we did like assemblies and spoke about things, but when we needed to decide whether to go to the police or not and who will spoke with the police, it was decided inside this group. And it wasn't a democratic decision that who will be part of this group. It wasn't democratic.
You mentioned before some of the subjects that the movement is trying to open up or tried to open up last summer. You mentioned housing, health insurance, if I'm not mistaken, education, just all sorts of social life. You didn't mention occupation, for example. Mm-hmm. Is that a non-issue for the movement, or was that omitted on purpose?
It's like it's a non-issue, but it was always an issue, because when you try to make it a non-issue, it always come back to you in ways that you need to say three times a day, I'm not dealing with this issue. Personally, I think this is one of the mistakes of the movement. Not personally, I think the movement decided not to deal with this issue to gain a wider support and to say even the settlers can identify with social justice or just narrow social demands, and people that vote for Netanyahu also suffer from the housing problem, the education problem, the food problem, and all those other stuff that I mentioned. And the decision maybe was, I mean, it was good, because at the first weeks of the movement, polls on the newspapers showed that this movement had an 87% of support in the population, which is the biggest number Israel had of supporting anything in Israel. You know, it's like people all over the political range, all over the countries, all over the different sectors of the society, all the people said, we can't continue to live like that in Israel. So it has its virtues also.
You mentioned settlers and the settlements.
They didn't take part of in the movement.
Yeah, you mentioned that even they could be sympathetic with the goals that you were trying to portray as the goals of the movement. But this movement is a movement for social justice. Mm-hmm. Isn't the very existence of the settlements, which are, as you know, illegal under the international law, quite the opposite of social justice? Don't they represent a total social injustice?
Yeah, they are. They represent the way, in some different ways, a lot of different ways, they represent the injustice of Israel, also society, and also the outside conflicts of Israel, because first of all they take land that is not theirs to take. They take jobs from the Palestinians, they take the security from the Palestinians, and they take my, as Israeli citizens, they take my budgets and my finance system to their needs, because I don't want to pay for their security, I don't want to pay for their social system of welfare and housing, because the only place in Israel that has a welfare system is the occupied territories, and not for the Palestinians, of course, for the settlers. So it's a very big problem, and I said, personally, I think it's a problem that we didn't deal with.
So how come, I mean, you mentioned your personal opinion, but how come the movement didn't react to, for example, such huge costs that the illegal settlements are having for the Israeli state? I mean,
well,
a lot of
I think because there are two levels of understanding in the Israeli society, and I think both of them at the end are legitimate. As a Marxist, I can say, well, the occupation is part of the Israeli capitalism. It's part of the Israeli capitalist movement because the tycoons, the big capitalists and bourgeoisie of Israel, they make money out of the occupation. They make money out of cheap labor force. They make money out of building the settlements. And the occupation is part of the Israeli capitalism. But the exploitment of Israeli workers is part of the capitalism. The injustice of the education system in Israel, it's part of the capitalism as well. The privatization of all the social services in Israel, this is part of the capitalism, and it has none connection with the occupation. That those things can be part of the reality without the occupation also, right? And those are problems in the Israeli society that we need to solve. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I think it's kind of a strategic mistake to think that we can solve all the problems and demand a real social justice without the end of the occupation. But it's not a contradiction that has inside.
Yeah, you've explained the position of the movement regarding the occupation, and you've explained why the movement has decided not to problematize the occupation itself and focus mainly on the social issues inside Israel proper. What about the situation of Arab citizens of Israel? Were there ever a topic?
If you look on the protest movement, there's a left-wing movement and on a socialist movement. One of the problems of the left in Israel during the past years is that it was only a solidarity movement. Why are you in the left? Because I'm in solidarity with the Palestinians. Why are you in the left? Because we need to build a state for the Palestinians, and we need to honor and give the right things for the Arab minority in Israel. But you can't win the fight without an historical block of interests of all the society in Israel. How did they win the fights in France, in the French Revolution, or in the Soviet Union when they started the revolution in 1917? We needed to understand that the Israeli left can be a movement of different interests of different parts of the society declaring we have the same interest. Arabs in Israel and Jewish in Israel have the same interest of social justice. And it's not only that I'm here for the Arab minority, I'm also here for me. And this is what happened differently in this protest movement. Jewish came to the big demonstrations on Haifa and heard an Arab citizen speaking their problems, about their problems. And this is making a huge change in the Israeli reality. Because when I understand that me as a Jewish citizen and he as an Arab citizen have the same interests in the society, it's making a really big change. And this is one part of the answer. And the other part of the answer that we had is that we had a special demands of the Arab minority in Israel, such as the approval of the building of in their
neighborhoods.
Villages and neighborhoods and cities and all the stuff, and also acknowledging the acknowledge villages in the Negev of the Bedouins.
The unrecognized villages.
The unrecognized, yes, recognizing the.
So, to what extent, were Palestinians inside Israel, I mean the citizens, part of the movement? Since they formed 20% of the population, I guess the 20% of the movement weren't Arabs, or were they?
They weren't Arabs, because of some problems inside the movement and inside the society. A lot of, most of the political system in Israel is divided. There is politics for Jewish and politics for Arabs, and it's not something that is going in a combination and in a joint politics. There is only one party in Israel that is a joint Jewish-Arab party, and it's the Communist Party of Israel. When the tents in Haifa started, it was a Jewish-Arab tents. When the tents in Lydia started, it was a Jewish-Arab tents. And when there was a national assembly formed, it was a national assembly with Jewish and Arabs in it. I'm not sure if it was 20-80%. It was somewhere around that. In some of the movements that an organization that grew up from this movement, some of the movements are Jewish Arab movements, and in every demonstration that we held in Tel Aviv, it was very important for us to invite an Arab speaker on the stage to speak and to have this unity between Arabs and Jews.
Right now, thousands and thousands of African refugees are in Israel, facing big problems deriving from their non-status, basically, in Israel. Nobody knows for sure what their status is. They're not refugees. Their asylum is not even being
acknowledged.
But the government said that they'll look the other way and they can get jobs even though they don't have the legal permission to work. What is the movement's position towards the question of African refugees in Israel?
Well, my part of the movement, because I'm not sure what is, because there wasn't a debate, national debate about this issue, but our stance regarding this situation is that, first of all, people that are seeking life have to be to have the opportunity to get inside Israel and to have an asylum over here, because we look on them as refugees, and we are sure that if they came here during a very tough way, some of them died on the way, got raped on the way, got mugged on the way, they had the need to escape from somewhere. And we say Israel is founded over refugees from different times and different places in history. So why can't we open our gates for some refugees? This is the first stage. The second stage is that the government can't put all the refugees and all the life-seeking and asylum seekers in Israel in one neighborhood or in two different neighborhoods in the country. When you have concentration of poor people in one place, it's becoming a place with violence and with very big difficulties. So we say the government has to have organized program for this problem, to put and to open the gates of other neighborhoods. Why can't the rich people from the north have some refugees in their neighborhood also, and they put it only on the very poor neighborhoods of the south? And those neighborhoods of the south have problems without, before they had problems before of the refugees. They didn't need to wait for the refugees to say, oh, we have problems in our neighborhoods, as some of the ministers and people from the government tries to put it nowadays, that their problem is because of the refugees. It's not true. They didn't put any money on those neighborhoods before. there are problems of education over there, there are problems of housing over there, there are problems of budgets over there, and those problems need to be solved in any case regarding the refugees.
Is the movement thinking about including maybe the refugees in the struggle?
We tried, they don't, they're afraid of taking part in anything that can be looked as opposition for the government. We tried to make marches with them, and they come and they look and they talk to us, but when we start to march, they stay in their neighborhoods and they don't come with us. It's a problem.
Z enim od glavnih protagonistov izraelskega gibanja za socialno pravičnost, Alon Liam Greenom, je govoril Boris Vaso. Intervju Radija Študent.